Welcome to In the Studio, a 21st century perspective on history's greatest rock album. I'm Redbeard, and today, in the studio, it's double anniversaries for two of Joe Walsh's biggest solo albums. This week in the studio, it's a dual anniversary for Joe Walsh's two biggest sellers, The Smoker You Drink and But Seriously, Folks.
I wanted it to be a band, like Traffic, you know. Traffic songs aren't Steve Winwood songs, they're Traffic songs, you know? And I wanted it to be a band, and that's why we had to break up. Because when Rocky Mountain Way came out, that was all me. And the record company didn't care about anybody in the band, and the promoters didn't care about anybody in the band, and the reviewers didn't care about anybody in the band. And it was all Joe Walsh's back, and that wasn't it. Hi gang, it's Joe Walsh here, and you're in the studio for my 1973 album, The Smoker You Drink, The Player You Get.
As the 70s decade went on, a Cleveland, Ohio-based power trio called the James Gang was beginning to show us all some stuff. And based on the strengths of a pair of albums, James Gang Rides Again and Thirds, the young frontman in the James Gang was quickly to become a bona fide contender as America's newest guitar hero back then. His name? Joe Walsh. But just as the James Gang was being heralded as a potential superstar group, Walsh decided it was time to walk away. So in early 1972, Joe Walsh left the relative security of a successful band to seek out new challenges. He was soon joined by multi-instrumentalist Joe Vitale, a former rival in the Cleveland, Ohio bar band circuit. Armed with Vitale, who was quite handy on drums, keyboards, and flute, Joe Walsh was ready. The question was, for what?
I didn't know. I had no idea what else I was going to do. All I knew was that I had pretty much saturated three-piece, and I was starting to feel a lot more orchestration and a lot more melodic. You can tell on Thirds. I was just feeling that, and I was frustrated just being the only melodic instrument. And I wanted to expand and try something else, you know. I also didn't want to stereotype myself into like an American rocking guitar player. I felt like there was more of a musician than that in me, and I barely made it as it was. I was terrified that would be the end of me. But in retrospect, you know, every time I've made a major 180-degree decision, it's always been for the best. I knew something would happen if I just believed in myself. And slowly, Vitale and I put Barnstorm together.
And now in the studio, the truth can finally be told about how several business people reacted when Joe Walsh attempted to strike out on his own.
Now, at the time, I had left the James Gang. I had formed Barnstorm and gone through my life savings, income, everything I had in the bank, because I believed in Barnstorm. We weren't doing very well because powers that be didn't want me to leave the James Gang, but I felt I had to. Powers that be being old management, James Gang management, this is the truth, and the record company wanted to discourage my solo attempt barnstorm, hoping I would either go back with the James Gang or...
No kidding.
They didn't want me... They didn't want people to know that I wasn't in the James Gang.
So in a sense, they were trying to smoke you out.
Yeah. Although that's why the first Barnstorm album didn't do very well.
So there were some business people conspiring for it not to
do. Yeah, conspiracy, yes. When I lived in Ipswich, Massachusetts, I was driving around with wife and child at the time, just had the kid, and I was driving around one morning and it was foggy, and I looked across this meadow and I saw, it was beautiful, there were horses. It was a horse farm, and I saw, of course, like old half-fallen-down barn. But the thing I noticed for the first time was there was about a half-mile wall, you know? I mean, there's walls all over New England that used to be property dividers that the farmers would they'd pile rocks up along the border of their land to clear the land to farm. And there's miles and miles of them in New England. Just go wander off through the woods, and nobody cares about them anymore. And they're all falling down. Parts of them are, you know, all over the ground, and parts of them are 3 feet high. And I was feeling kind of lonely, and it was a real foggy morning, and I was in a very thoughtful mood. And I just went back and wrote about it.
That's Joe Walsh revealing inspiration for the song Meadows on 1973's The Smoker You Drink, The Player You Get album, his second with the band Barnstorm. Turns out the James Gang producer Bill Zimzik induced Joe, married and with one baby daughter, to head west.
I went to Colorado because I needed to get out of Cleveland. I think that was part of leaving the James Gang. That was part of, you know, changing the entire environment, and I went to Colorado basically because that's where Bill Zimzik lived, and he was forming a record company called Tumbleweed at the time, and I talked to him, and I said, I don't know where to go, and he said, well, come here. There's plenty going on. You know, I'm here, so you got a head start. So I did. I went there and lived near Boulder for about 6 months before Vitaly called me up. And he drove out, I guess, from Detroit in like an old Econoline van and showed up at my house one day with his drums in the back. And his drums were in the back the entire winter. They were frozen solid when we finally decided to bring him in the house. Yeah, because we made model airplanes for 6 months, you know, and just played my piano and goofed around and talked about what we wanted to do. The last, you know, we both hated music at the time. You played with Ted Nugent for a year. See how your brains are. Yeah, so we got some nice picks and went and got his drums out of the truck one day, set them up in my house and got started.
Finally ready to start playing again, Joe Walsh turned to Tommy Bolin, the young Denver guitarist, to supply interim bass.
Tommy was at my house one time in Colorado, and I said, hey, we, you know, Del Vitale and I are kind of starting to think about a bass player. And Tommy said, the only guy that'll work is Kenny Pazzarelli, but he's nuts. So good luck. So I found Kenny. He was up in Vancouver playing bass in the band on the equivalent of Sesame Street for kids. And I called him up, and he had just had his tonsils taken out. So he didn't even remember that I called. So a month later, I called him again, and he said, who? But then he finally decided to come down and showed up. And one day, he just showed up and drove into my, parked on the lawn, right off the driveway, right on the lawn in a 48 Chevy with a big, you know, bass violin in the back. He didn't have an electric bass. And came in, said, hi, man. And Vitaly looked at each other and went, oh, no, because he had braces on. And
a timeless favorite, that's Rocky Mountain Way from Joe Walsh and the first top 10 album, The Smoker You Drink, The Player You Get. Dating back to the 50s, there was this guitar talk box unit that Joe used on Rocky Mountain Way in 1973. It's an awkward contraption. Here's Joe to describe.
I got that from Bill West. Bill West is the husband of Dottie West, the country singer. Bill plays pedal steel, and he invents things in his garage. And the talk box is actually a little speaker wrapped up in a box. You can't hear it, and it's connected to a piece of surgical tubing so that the sound comes up through the piece of surgical tubing. And you put that in your mouth and hold it with your teeth, like a cigar. And the sound from your guitar goes from your guitar through the amp into this little speaker. You know, it's the equivalent of it being in the other room or something. You can't really hear that. The sound comes up through the piece of surgical tubing into your mouth. And so that is, in fact, the larynx. You know, people who have had their larynx removed, they have to get this buzzer and put it on their throat. And then they move their mouth without their throat making any sound. The little buzzer that they put on their throat makes the sound. And then they talk, and it sounds like a robot, but it's called modulation. So what you do is you modulate your guitar sound. You know, I don't make any noise with my throat when I do that. I just change the, you know, the cavity of my mouth and throat or talk. It's like whispering without any air coming through.
With Joe Vitale and Kenny Passarelli secured, Joe Walsh finally began recording their own album, which they called Barnstorm. Though it wasn't clear by the album cover, Barnstorm was meant to be a band album rather than a Joe Walsh solo project. In fact, Joe told me he named the band Barnstorm after a hobby of his.
One of my favorite things, kind of a Charles Gralt rap, but noticing when you're driving around off the highway, old homesteads and old falling down barns and farm buildings. You know, the ones with the chewing tobacco paintings on the side. And my dad had been an Air Force test pilot, and I had heard that he used to do incredible things in a biplane. He was kind of like a barnstormer, you know. And so I was driving around, and there's all these old homesteads that didn't work up in the mountains in Colorado, and I came across that barn on the Barnstorm album, and I went there several times.
Joe's success would cause his solo career to soar, enough so that he would soon fly like an eagle, but not before heartbreaking personal tragedy would devastate Joe Walsh, revealed next in the studio. I'm Redbeard, you're in the studio with Joe Walsh on the 45th anniversary of The Smoker You Drink, The Player You Get.
Welcome back to In the Studio. This week we're discussing my album called The Smoker You Drink, The Player You Get. I'm Joe Walsh, and now back to that bum Redbeard.
Thank you, Joe. It's the anniversary of Walsh's biggest album, but seriously, folks, reluctantly, Joe Walsh had to give up his vision for the band Barnstorm after touring in the Eagles on the 1977 Hotel California tour. It was now spring 1978, and time for another Joe Walsh solo album.
I wanted it to be a band, like Traffic, you know. Traffic songs aren't Steve Winwood songs, they're Traffic songs, you know. And I wanted it to be a band, and that's why we had to break up. Because when Rocky Mountain Way came out, that was all me. And the record company didn't care about anybody in the band, and the promoters didn't care about anybody in the band, and the reviewers didn't care about anybody in the band, and it was all Joe Walsh's back, and that wasn't it. Ladies and gentlemen, Barnstorm is what I'm trying to say, and everybody said, well, we don't care about, you know, the band, it's Joe Walsh.
There was another compelling reason why Joe Walsh joined the sanctuary provided by the Eagles. You won't find it in any book or magazine, but Joe Walsh first revealed it to me here in the studio.
I was tired of my career. Also, at the time, I was coming off of the death of my daughter, Emma, who was killed by a drunken driver in 1974. Some senile, drunken lady ran a stop sign, and I lost my family. And I tried to kill myself for 2 years, and that's why I called my album So What? I didn't care about nothing. I didn't have any emotions, and I was not strong enough to continue a solo career. On So What is a song called Song for Emma.
Oh.
She died when she was 4.
That's sad.
Nobody knew that. I didn't allow being in People magazine or Associated Press or anything. I kept that very quiet. But that squished me like a bug. And I tried to kill myself for 18 months, and I still wasn't dead, so I forgave God and joined the Eagles just to get going again.
The melancholy Indian Summer from 1978's Joe Walsh solo project. But seriously, folks, I'm Redbeard. You're in the studio with Joe Walsh for the 40th anniversary of his biggest solo album, But Seriously, Folks.
Welcome back to In the Studio. I'm Joe Walsh, and this is Redbeard.
Thank you, Joe. It's the anniversary of Walsh's biggest album, But Seriously, Folks.
It's amazing how many people to this day, even musicians, talk about how important seeing Barnstorm played live or the Barnstorm albums had to do with influencing them. You know, an awful lot of people have said that they structured their band or that was really, really meaningful. And I think it's kind of a nicely kept thing that it now is in perspective. I was always disappointed because I thought we could have gained a lot more success than we did.
Joe reveals how his relationship with the Eagles evolved after original Eagle Bernie Ledden flew the nest.
As a matter of fact, a couple of times the Eagles opened for me.
No kidding.
When So What was out.
You
at
were.
That point, coming off of Rocky Mountain Way with Turn to Stone coming out.
You were huge.
I was a monster for the summer after that. Bernie Ledden decided he wanted to quit. He didn't like that the band was going more and more rock and roll, more and more electric. He's a flat-picking traditionalist. Banjo, acoustic guitars, and the guys in the Eagles are not dumb. None of us are dumb. They realized that wouldn't make it. You know, Peter, Paul, and Mary syndrome, you can only go so far.
I'm Redbeard. On the 40th anniversary year of Joe Walsh's biggest seller, But Seriously, Folks, we'll be back in the studio after this. This is Redbeard in the studio, thanking my Buckeye buddy, Joe Walsh. In the Studio is written and produced by yours truly, Redbeard, for Bearded Fish Productions, copyright 2018, all rights reserved. Transcription by Jane Carpenter Brunet, theme song by Andy Timmons. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and online at inthestudio.net.